Maybe a bye week for the Steelers, but not for us here at the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. The North Shore Drive podcast brings you the Acrisure Fan Advantage, where we're going to take a mailbag episode and answer a ton of your burning questions here. I'm your host, Chris Carter. We've got Brian Batko here to talk with you, answer your Steelers questions during the bye week as they get ready to rest and then get back at it and travel to Los Angeles to take on the Rams, all here on the North Shore Drive podcast. Get ready for all your questions to be answered. Let's get into it. You are now listening to the North Shore Drive podcast, a show on all things Pittsburgh sports from the writers of the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, hosted by Christopher Carter. Hello, welcome to the North Shore Drive podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carter, with bringing you this show that comes on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and Saturdays with the Acrisure Fan Advantage. As always, you can find this show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Like this video if you enjoyed. Subscribe to this channel to get all of your daily Monday through Friday episode, Monday through Friday content, as well as your weekend content like the Acrisure Fan Advantage, which you have to remind you, this episode is brought to you by the Acrisure Fan Advantage, where all year long, the Fan Advantage brings you closer to the Steelers than ever before, because if we feature exclusive answers to your burning questions from Steelers insider Brian Batko, who joins us today, and we have in-depth conversations each week with the opponent's expert, with an expert on the opponent the Steelers have each week, but no opponent, so we got Brian answering your questions.
You should have just had an empty chair sit here and talk about the bye week, and you could have just like done 10 minutes being like, hey, do you think Matt Canada can scheme against your defense?
And then just silence.
And then you just sit there for 2 minutes. I think that could have been some electric content, Chris.
Absolutely. It would have actually been pretty funny. Like I could have edited like some cricket sounds in with it. That would have been a good time. But let's get into some of these questions. Now you all have submitted some questions. We don't always get a chance to get to them, but we're going to get to a bunch that would be here that you guys have here. So let's get started here with some of our bigger questions. And I'm going to lead with this question. This question comes from Christo. And it's a question that a lot of people have. Do you think Levi Wallace should start over Joey Porter Jr.? And Brian, I'm going to add on to this question. If Joey Porter Jr. were to start right now, would you start him in place of Levi Wallace? Or would you start him in place of Patrick Peterson? Or would you not start him at all?
I would probably start him in place of Patrick Peterson at this point. I think I said it on our Friday show that at this juncture, I'm willing to see what Pat P can do in some other various roles, which was really talked about ad nauseum in the offseason when they signed him, came up at his opening introductory presser, came up in OTAs, came up in training camp, and just haven't really seen much of it in game action. But I think it's time for that to change. And coming out of the bye week where everybody got a chance to decompress a bit, you know, players got to get away, think about things or not, if that's what they want to do. Coaches got a chance to look at what's working and what isn't and talk through some potential schematic adjustments. Now would be the time. And I thought it was interesting on Tuesday, Terrell Austin, defensive coordinator, was asked, hey, if Joey forces his way onto the field and Patrick Peterson's playing well, could Levi play in the slot? And you know, Chris, normally coaches answer questions like that with, oh, yeah, we feel great about everybody doing everything, even if they don't believe that. But he was like, I don't really look at it in that way. So, yeah, I mean, I think Levi Wallace is going to be on the outside or bust. And, you know, I'm not completely ready to bench him just yet. So that would be the way that I would configure the secondary. Although, again, I think if it comes down to just rotating Porter in more often, that would be a good enough solution for me at this point.
Very interesting. Very interesting. I feel like I'm with you on this. Patrick Peterson has been the biggest liability as far as the cornerback so far. Levi Wallace looked like that 2 weeks, but he's had some key breakups. Even in this Ravens game, there were twice he got challenged deep, and he was in place. Like the two deep balls that were dropped that were a big, well, one of the deep balls that was dropped was a big problem, came when they were going after Shandon Sullivan, which is another thing. I think they need to move Shandon Sullivan out of the slot role. That's where Desmond King or Patrick
Peterson. He just hasn't made many plays. He flashed to me in the preseason, but since then it's been, you know, more of the guy that you thought you were getting based on his track record to this point.
If he at least brought what Mike Hilton or Arthur Maulet brought in, defending the run, blitzing the quarterback, being aggressive in the box, that'd be one thing. But you can't not be good there and then also not be an asset in coverage, which right now that looks like where it's Shannon Sullivan. If I'm the Steelers, Joey Porter Jr. is lining up on the outside. I'm putting Levi Wallace out there because he's probably your second best option at this point. And then, yeah, keep Patrick Peterson in. Let him play in the middle a little bit. Move him around. Right now, I'm putting Joey Porter on the outside. He's shown more than enough, in my opinion. We're going to move to our next question here. This one comes from Mark Bergen, who comes from Believe in Steelers podcast, who asks, what constitutes a successful 2023 season for the Steelers? And I feel like the start of the season shouldn't negate too many predictions right now, unless you thought the Steelers were going like 16-1 and going to the Super Bowl or anything like that. But we all kind of talked about, like, if this is a good year for the Steelers, it still isn't the year that makes them Super Bowl contenders. This is the year that can set up the future years, the window in the coming years to be a Super Bowl contender, but they need to take some serious strides this year. What would be a successful season in your eyes, Brian, for the 2023 Steelers?
I don't even know that my answer to this is record-based. I think it's more about growth of Kenny Pickett being crucial to your long-term success here, or at least over the course of these next few years. I mean, that's the kind of the irony or the paradox of having a QB on a rookie contract. You know, on one hand, you're like, hey, it's still early in his career. He's only started one full season's worth of games to this point. Don't rush to judgment. Don't bury the guy yet. But on the other hand, this is kind of when you need to strike. The iron is hot when you've got the cheap QB and you can build up around him, you know, with highly paid players on defense or in his own supporting cast to help him out. And in the case of the Steelers specifically, you know, they're not a team that makes rash decisions, obviously, and they take things with a very long-term view and as far as stability and continuity being good over the balance of years and decades. But it's a high stakes, high leverage season and situation for them right now, because TJ Watt is clearly in his prime and playing some of the best ball that you're going to see from anybody who ever puts on one of these hypocycloid helmets. And Minkah Fitzpatrick is right there too in his prime. And we haven't even gotten the big number 97 yet, who is dealing with an injury already. And you've got to think that Cam Hayward's best years are probably behind him. So, you know, you miss on this window because your quarterback play isn't good enough, that's going to be one of those problems that leaves you kicking yourself down the road. So, you know, 10-7, 9-8, you know, even 8-9, if it happens, how you get there would probably mean the offense has continued to sputter. But even if you go barely 500 again and you miss the playoffs, as long as Kenny Pickett is looking like the guy by the end of this year, I think that would constitute a successful 2023. But I acknowledge that those two things probably aren't going to happen in concert, because if he plays really well and fills you with optimism, you're probably going to feel good about the record and the postseason result as well.
That's my thing. If Kenny Pickett does that, they're a playoff team. And if they're a playoff team, they might beat a couple teams if Kenny Pickett is taking that serious step forward, because this defense has shown the ability to create turnovers and to take advantage of mistakes. And if the offense were to tune up and become even just a middling offense in the NFL, like right now, the past few years, they've been a bottom offense in the NFL. If they take a step up and be like in the middle of the NFL, like, you know, we're talking 16th, 15th, 14th in that range, that makes this team such a different competitor for a lot of teams to have to consider. That's what I think Kenny Pickett has to do if he does. And if he does that, I think that, like you said, regardless of the record, that'll make for a successful season, because then the Steelers will know that they have a franchise quarterback on their roster. But also, I think it would also constitute a successful season even if you did measure it by win, because if they did that and they got to the end of the season, I'd bet that they'd have a winning record again, and such a winning record that would allow them to get to the playoffs. So all that being said, I think I'm right with you. It's less about the record. It's more about getting Kenny Pickett in the right place to constitute a successful season. Our last question here in the first segment before we move on, we have a Matt Canada whole segment because we got Matt Canada questions coming at us. But before we get to that,
that MPJ is sounding good right about now.
Exactly.
It's not too late to roll with that idea. Avant-garde podcast.
The Southern Yinzer asks, do you think the defense will ever get over the loss of Ryan Shazier? I know we probably won't find a single player who has his versatility and speed, but surely we can scheme something up there. I think Southern Yinzer has a point here because Ryan Shazier, I mean, at this point, he's now been gone six seasons. Like he was injured in 2017. I think it was November of 2017. So we're about a month and a half away from when he was injured and his career was ended in Cincinnati. And Brian, that's crazy to think about it being that long ago that's when that happened for the Steelers. And they've been trying to find a replacement. They haven't. They drafted Devin Bush. They signed John Bostic. That didn't work. Then they drafted Devin Bush. That didn't work. Then they signed Miles Jack. That didn't work. Now they have a whole cadre of new linebackers here.
Joe Schobert, Avery Williamson.
I forgot about Joe Schobert. But they've tried so many. Like they even put Mark Arthur Barron. Moulton inside linebacker at one point. But I look at this and I do think that it's bigger than just finding a talent at linebacker. Ryan Shazier, when he was in, like they were a top 10 defense. When he was out, they were like 16 or below. Like they were an average to below average defense when he wasn't on the field. When he was on the field, they were one of the best defenses in football. You don't just find that every day. And to Southern Yinzer's point, I think that's why that loss was so tough for that team.
Hey, at some point in the remaining lifespan of the Steelers franchise, yes, I think the defense will recover from losing Ryan Shazier well before his career should have ended. But I get what Southern Yinzer's asking. And I would say, you know, after the second half of that Ravens game, this is probably the best you could feel about the inside linebacker unit for this team since Shazier went down. You know, Quan Alexander, Cole Holcomb, and Landon Roberts, obviously none of those guys are comparable players to what Shazier was, but if the whole can finally be greater than the sum of its parts for the inside backers, maybe this Steelers defense can you know, stop missing a beat there in the middle where you felt so discouraged by the moves they've made there in the past. This trio is looking like they're three veteran guys who know what they're doing, and they certainly like to hit people. It's good to have that mentality back at inside linebacker.
Just a reminder, this show is brought to you by the AccraSure Fan Advantage, where all season long, the AccraSure Fan Advantage will bring you closer to the team than ever before. Get all your exclusive answers to the Pittsburgh Steelers with burning questions to Steelers insider Brian Batko, who joins us today, and as well as in-depth conversations with opponent experts each week. But we're doing the mailbag episode since it is a bye week for the Steelers. Tune in every Friday and the day before each Steelers game on Saturdays to get the AccraSure Fan Advantage. Visit AccraSure.com/fanadvantage for more information and to submit your questions today. We'll be right back with more here on the North Shore Drive podcast. It's the AccraSure Fan Advantage. Back here on the North Shore Drive podcast, it's the AccraSure Fan Advantage brought to you by AccraSure. Brian, let's get to some Matt Canada questions. You seem to be lamenting this future coming to you here. Let's go to a question from Barbara, who says, it seems that when the offense is not working, Matt Canada has no backup plan to go to. Wouldn't a good offensive coordinator have a system with several game plans ready to react to different defenses? Brian, I feel like that plays right into the conversation that's been had all week about did Kenny Pickett call an audible? Was Matt Canada mad at Kenny Pickett for changing up his plays and that's why he didn't look happy in the booth? Meanwhile, we all know that man was too focused on trying to figure out what he was going to call for a two-point conversion. that the call that Kenny Pickett made at the line of scrimmage when he said Randy was a check. He switched the protection, and that allowed for also George Pickens to be on the hot read, say, hey, you're going deep here. We're gonna have Max protect. It's gonna be you that we're giving a shot to on this play. And that's exactly what happened. And Kenny Pickett, Jalen Warren, George Pickens, they've all confirmed that's something they worked on all week. It was absolutely part of the plan. But I think that Barber's point here is there isn't always necessarily a good counter when defenses are bringing certain challenges. The Steelers can't even do their normal plans right. Is not having alternative plans a big part of the problem here for the Steelers offense?
I think this also probably goes back to the controversy of last week with the CBS broadcast, including 2 weeks ago, including the nugget that Canada talked about how this offense isn't really built to come from behind. Obviously, we talked at length about how he thought that was taken out of context, and he sort of refuted what he meant by that. But I mean, that's what you can't really deny there, though, is that the Steelers in these last couple seasons have not done a good job of being able to claw back from a big deficit. In fact, usually once it gets away from them, things just tend to snowball, right? I mean, that's why you're seeing a lot of these blowouts of 30-6, 30-7 last year, 38-3. Some of the other scores exactly slipped my mind. But I mean, that's probably partially just due to being the worst team on some of those days, and by a lot when you play the Eagles and the Bills a year ago, but and the Niners this year. But the Texans game is probably a good example of how do you let that get so far away without coming up with another way to attack that defense, or putting and this is another, I think, frequent and fair criticism of Canada's tenure here so far, putting your players in the best position to succeed, fitting your scheme, your game plan, your play calling to your personnel, rather than trying to do it the other way around and put some square pegs in some round holes. So and I guess to be fair on the other side of it too, maybe Kenny Pickett's just not a quarterback at this point in his development or ever who can throw a team back into a game. But, they do have a quick strike offense that has worked a few times this year, which is, one of the more strange things about the offensive woes is last year there was no quick strike. The only way they could do it was if they consistently drove down, bored a defense to death, and then scored in short yardage. Now it seems like the only way they can score is hitting a big play over the top and almost falling backwards into it. So, the fact that they can't really get both of those pieces of an offense to work together is one of the many, many indictments of the Canada era thus far.
S. Beth asks, I'm wondering whether this will finally be the Matt Canada make it or you bid goodbye season. I know the offense seemed better in the preseason, but it's been five games and the offense is still bad. Beth, I think you're on the point that everyone's on. Yeah. I've been of the opinion for years. I felt like the first year that Matt Canada took over, that wasn't really his offense. That was Ben Roethlisberger's offense. That was Ben Roethlisberger getting able to do whatever he wanted to do from the Randy Fichtner era, except he would be able to call what he wanted, switch what he wanted, when he wanted. I think last year was an offensive line that was decrepit until the second half of the season when they started to come together, and he played with a backup and then a rookie quarterback. This is the year that Matt Canada does need to show something. And I think everyone's in unison here, Brian. The Steelers aren't going to fire Matt Canada midseason, but if this offense is not at least trending towards in the lower teens, like we're talking 15, 14, 13, if it's not in that range by the end of the season, they will let go of Matt Canada and they'll find someone else that can either work with Kenny Pickett or work with this offense to make it the unit they want it to be.
No, I think they're going to stick with him until a chant breaks out at a Pirates game or possibly a Riverhounds match.
Duquesne football.
Yes. Yes, Beth. This will be Matt Canada's last season unless things really pick up here over the course of these last few months.
I'm right with you and Beth here. This is the last call for Matt Canada. We've got one more segment of questions here on the Acrisure Fan Advantage on the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. Stick with us. We'll be right back. We're back here in the North Shore Drive podcast. It's the AcroShare Fan Advantage brought to you by AcroShare here on the North Shore Drive podcast with Chris Carter and Brian Batko. We're taking your questions.
Go We've Dukes, got, by the way. I hope nobody besmirches Jerry Schmidt's good name and program by chanting Fire Matt Canada at Rooney Field. Up on the bluff.
I just feel like y'all can take a break from the Fire Matt Canada chants. I will say this. It is funny that they are undefeated at home when they chant Fire Matt Canada this year.
Chris, I don't know. I was at my sister-in-law's wedding last weekend, and one of the the intro, you know how people at the reception, they do like the bridesmaids and the groomsmen, they walk in and they do a little like thing on the dance floor when their names get announced. They did like somebody threw the bouquet to somebody else, and the DJ was like, oh, that's better than a Matt Canada play. And then literally this week I did trivia one night with my friends, and one of the team names was Fire Matt Canada. So I truly, truly cannot escape it, which is maybe why I've seemed a little beaten down by this overall topic and vibe.
What has happened to this city?
What has happened to society? I don't know.
What has happened to society? Like, we used to be a country, a real country. And now we're just chanting Fire Matt Canada at everything. Like,
it's a countywide bit at this point.
Look, I'm surprised Primanti's hasn't come up with a Fire Matt Canada sandwich at this point. Like I'm expecting it. Why, Primanti's, if you're watching this show, why don't you have a Fire Matt Canada sandwich? I guarantee you, you'd get a whole lot. You can make it spicy because you're firing someone. Like, this is ridiculous. It's everywhere. Pittsburgh fans, please, let's switch it up just a little bit. We're going to switch it up here.
We didn't start the fire parody on Twitter today, but as somebody replied, it was, we want somebody fired. That's really what it's come down to.
Okay, I have to admit, I saw that you typed it out with the music things next to it. I had no idea. I could not figure out the cadence that you were going at.
Now you'll know. So now go back and read it. And,
all right. Yeah. All right. I'll go back and read when we hang out here. Time.
Okay, let's get some final
questions. Let's get some questions. Hey, I'm trying to get to the question. I have Dan M. who wants to ask a Tomlin question. Dan M. asks, why do some in the press refer to Coach Tomlin as the defensive coordinator? I've heard it on the Cochran Sports Showdown on September 10th and read it a couple times in the Post-Gazette on September 14th.
Wow, it comes across seats.
Yeah, right. He's naming dates. It comes across as disrespectful to defensive coordinator Terrell Austin and meant as a negative comment about Coach Mike Tomlin, which I think it's meant to, because I don't ever hear Mike Tomlin defense the defensive coordinator when the Steelers defense was whooping tail for all them years. When they get 2019, when they were winning games with Devlin Hodges and Mason Rudolph, and that defense was literally just dragging this team by itself to victory. No one was bringing up that Mike Tomlin calls the plays on defense or anything like that. Then all of a sudden, when there's struggles on defense, Mike Tomlin runs the defense. I think Dan M's on to something here. Brian, could you break this down for us with your insights?
Just to answer Dan fairly straightforward on the question he asked, I mean, this comes up because, number one, Tomlin has a defensive coaching background. He was a successful DC for the Vikings, and he was he coordinator for the Bucs or just on the defensive staff there?
He was the secondary coach for the
Bucs. Right. So he was secondary coach, DC, and then came here after a year with Minnesota. So that's number one. Point number two, we know he's heavily involved with the defense. We've heard players like Joe Hayden after games say, Tomlin drew this up on the board at halftime. It was a great adjustment. We came back and won in the second half. And number three, the most specific answer to this is because there was the whole deal when previous DC Keith Butler was here at the end of his tenure, and then he eventually retired, and he said, think in a radio interview with 93.7 The Fan, if I'm not mistaken, that, Tomlin was the play caller at the end of his reign here as defensive coordinator. And he's like, that's basically like, that's fine. That's what Mike wanted to do. But that's why this has become a talking point to such a degree, because it was a rare instance of a coach on the staff pulling back the curtain and kind of finally saying publicly what's been reported many, many times by certainly our Jerry Dulac at the PG. Not sure about others, but it's kind of an open secret. And I think now there is a decent chance that Terrell Austin and Mike Tomlin are much more collaborative in their efforts in terms of calling plays on game days. But still, neither one of them, when given the chance, have really specifically pinpointed the division of labor, if you will. So that's another reason why it kind of looms over things.
I feel like they're not going to, no one's going to peel back the curtain until they absolutely feel like they have nothing to lose, like Keith Butler did in his situation when he was on his way out with the Steelers.
It doesn't need to be that way. There are other coaches around the league on both sides of the ball who just straight up tell you whether they're calling plays or not. And there are other coaches that do try to keep it a shadowy secret too, for whatever reason. But obviously we kind of know where Tomlin falls on that thing.
Absolutely. Let's move on to, this is a global question. This is an easy summer question that we can answer, you know, this is a bye week question, I guess you could say. Dominic T asks, who are the top three running backs in Steelers history? Let's go, Brian. We got top three running backs. Give me yours.
Jaylen Warren, Amos Zaraway, and Kareth White.
You went Kareth White on us here.
Look up his numbers. He averaged more than 5 yards a carry.
You, sir, are disrespecting Mawelde Moore.
Oh, I met Mawelde Moore, but, you know, back when I was, I guess I would have just been like a high school or college student at that point. And I don't know, he was at a bank branch or something, like doing an appearance, and I happened to be there. And I was like, hey, what's up? Seemed like a nice guy. Yeah, so, yeah, Kareth White. No, Amos Zaraway's out. Mawelde Moore's in. Kareth White's still in there. If you me give a more conventional answer.
There we go. I was waiting to hear.
Obviously, the two Hall of Famers pretty much need to be on every ballot. I don't think I'm ready to choose violence otherwise on this particular show. So Franco Harris and Jerome Bettis. And then the third one, I think for most people, would come down to Le'Veon Bell and Willie Parker. You know, Willie's got the Super Bowl, especially that long run. Le'Veon Bell, I think, has the overall better statistical profile and kind of broke down some barriers in the game with the way he played the position here, both his running style and obviously how prolific he was as a receiver. So despite how things ended, I'm going to put Le'Veon Bell there as number three, but this is always a tricky topic because it's like, are you judging it based on pure talent and ability when they played here? Or do you go more by resume? I guess it's in the eye of the beholder, whether it's Dominic T asking or anybody else.
I think one thing to remember about Franco Harris, because people just think of the immaculate reception and, oh, he was just part of that Steelers 70s team. He wasn't just part of it. Joe Green said, like, we didn't win before Super Bowls, before Franco Harris got there. We didn't win after he left. And Franco Harris was a huge part of that. If Franco Harris plays one more season with the Steelers, he went to the Seahawks and then retired because they weren't even using him. If he plays one more season with the Steelers, he was like within 100 yards of Jim Brown's all-time rushing record at the time. He could have, if he had stayed with the Steelers one more season, he would have broken that record. He would have been the all-time leading rusher in NFL history and retired as such.
Before I didn't say he's not on my ballot, Carter.
No. I'm not saying he's not.
No enforcement for me, as Mike Tomlin would say.
No. Yeah, I'm not coming at you, Brian. But there's a lot of people out there who I think just kind of just throw Franco Harris into the, who gave us the 70s. No, that dude was for real. He is the number one running back in the history of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'll also say Jerome Bettis. Jerome Bettis is also actually the first ever professional athlete I have asked a question to way back when the NFL Network used to do their high school students could write to NFL Network and ask them questions about their favorite athletes. And then that athlete would then go to their high school for a day and hang out. Jerome Bettis came to Taylor Alderdice High School to hang out with Jatan Amaker, one of my friends that went to Alderdice. And there was a whole gym thing where he was in the gym, he was hanging out, and he took questions, and I got to ask him, like, are you gonna break Eric Dickerson's rushing record or rushing standing? And he's like, I don't know, man, ED's gonna be tough. Sure enough, about 2 weeks later, he broke it. And so I got to ask that question. That's how journalist Chris Carter got started back in the day. But yeah, number three is Le'Veon Bell. That dude was way too talented. So I think it's unanimous here: Franco Harris, Jerome Bettis, Le'Veon Bell. That's the Acrisure Fan Advantage from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. He's Brian Batko. I'm Chris Carter. Thanks for tuning in. Find the show on your favorite podcasting apps and on YouTube. Thanks again to the Acrisure Fan Advantage. Check us out every single week. We'll have another opponent expert next week as the Steelers get ready to take on the Los Angeles Rams. But before that, check out the Monday episode of the North Shore Drive podcast. We'll be back after this weekend. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the North Shore Drive podcast from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette. If you watch this video on YouTube, please like the video and subscribe to our channel. For 3 months of digital access to post-gazette.com at 99 cents, click the link below in the description.